Sri Vishnu Sahasranama, name 132, Vedanga. Now, we've had the names just now, Veda, Vedavid, Avyanga, Vedanga. So it was Veda and Avyanga and now Vedanga. So there's some alliteration there. The sound is similar. Vedanga means, Veda means the Vedas. Actually, it's originally just Veda, Veda. One body of knowledge. And Anga means body or the limbs of the body. So, Vedanga means the Supreme Personality of Godhead, of whom the Vedas are his body or his limbs. In Keno Upanishad, Veda Saravangani, all the Vedas are his limbs. Or he is Vedanga because the Shrutis and the Smritis are his commands. So the Vedas are so intimately connected with Krishna and inseparable from Krishna that the Vedas are said to be his body. There's a word in English, not a very common word. As a verb, it's to reify. As a noun, that would be reification. That means something which is an abstract idea to make it into something concrete. So the Vedas, they are sounds. They are the knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, which means knowledge of everything. Knowledge is can be conveyed in various ways, but the abstract form of knowledge is that, the somewhat removed form of knowledge is that in the form of sound. In other words, we can get knowledge through different senses by seeing something. But the knowledge, if I want to convey to someone else, I have seen such and such a thing, then we have to use words. So the Vedas, they are the abstract description of he who is that knowledge, or the object of that knowledge. Vedaishta sarvera hameva vedyaha. In all the Vedas, he is to be known. So he is the person of whom the Vedas are so intimately connected that it's said to be his body. From Srimad Bhagavatam, there are two statements about the Supreme Personality of Godhead in which it's directly stated this. Traim refers to the Vedas, three Vedas, Rig, Sama, Yajur. Traim tanum swam paridhunvate namaha. We offer our obeisance to he who has the Veda for his body. Traim tanum. Traim means the Vedas, the three Vedas. And tanum means body. And about Varahadev, he's also prayed to, similarly. Traimayam rupamidam chashokaram. The Varaha, form of the Lord. His form is Traimayam, composed of the three Vedas. Name 133, Vedavit. That name just came in the very same verse. So not only does this name come, there are several names which come more than once in Vishnu Sahasranam. Some comes two times, some come three times. But this name comes twice in the same verse. Before it was Vedavit Bhanu. So those Vedavit, one who knows the Vedas, and Bhanu means the sun, so that which illuminates. So those two names can be joined together here. Vedavit, the name is there. He who knows the Vedas. Now in the previous verse, the name of Vishnu was given Saravavit, which means he who knows everything. So what's the difference between Vedavit, one who is aware of the Vedas, and Saravavit, one who is aware of everything? Because Veda means knowledge, so that should be knowledge of everything. Well, I thought of it like this, that Saravavit means one who knows everything in all details. Just like in Srimad Bhagavatam, it's stated that the smallest measurement of time is the time that it takes one atom to move over another. So Krishna is aware of every atom, its movement. And when we say atom, that doesn't mean what in the Western understanding or the English language is atom. Actually, atom, the etymological meaning of that is the smallest thing. And at the time, the concept of the atom came into the English language, they thought they found the smallest thing, but then they found something smaller and smaller and smaller. So it's not really an atom, if you take the etymological meaning, but paramanu, which means the supremely small, the smallest thing. That is the Sanskrit term for atom. So Krishna knows the movement of every atom. So he knows everything in all detail. But the Vedas, they don't give knowledge of how every atom is moving, but they give knowledge of the most important information of the universe and the principles by which it works and how we can utilize this knowledge for our own best benefit. The Vedas don't try to explain everything about everything, nor is that possible. But they give the basic principles. And we have within the body of Vedic literature, we have the Puranas, the Itihasas, that means the Mahabharata and the Ramayana, which in narration form, they demonstrate the principles of Vedic knowledge. For instance, in the Vedic knowledge, we discover that people, they get different bodies according to their activities. So we find that out in the Puranas, how Indra can be degraded to the status of a hog, or how Ajamil, who is very sinful, can be delivered from the otherwise inevitable hellish suffering because he chanted the name of Narayana, not even considering that Narayana is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So in this way, the how the Vedic principles are to be applied in our life, it's often very complex. Mahabharata is extremely complex, how the stories are all interwoven. And we'll find in different shastras it's described how different people, like famous personalities, what they were in their previous life and how they got into such a situation. So all these principles are demonstrated in the Vedas. But it's different from knowing the details, and the principle behind it is something else, which we can discuss more in the next name. So an important principle of knowing the Vedas is not only to know it, to learn, one can learn to chant the Vedas. And there's a whole science of doing that, how long each syllable is to be held, and the svara means the intonation. So that's all part of reciting the Vedas. But to know the true meaning of the Vedas, to understand what is the actual purpose of the Vedas, that is, such a person can really be called Vedavit, one who knows the Vedas, not one who simply learns them by rote. So, Vedavit means also one who contemplates the meaning of the Vedas, because the meaning is profound, and we can't understand everything all about it. It's not just like reading Bhagavad Gita, in which the essence of all Vedic knowledge is given. We can read it, but it's not like reading a novel. You read it and then you throw it away. And then if it's a really good novel, you might want to read it again. But you won't want to read it again and again and again. But Bhagavad Gita, you can read again and again and again. And we'll get more and more depth of understanding, because there's no limit to how much realization we can have of Bhagavad Gita, because it describes the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything about whom, all his qualities, his pastimes, his form, everything about him is beyond the ability of our intelligence to fully comprehend. So, however much we may think we know about Krishna, there's always more to be known. And again, it's not just acquisition of knowledge, but it's a realization of that knowledge. We cannot know everything about Krishna. The subject matter of the Vedas is Krishna, and Krishna is unlimited. So how much can we know Krishna? How much can we know the Vedas? Because the Vedas describe Krishna. This Lord Brahma, who was imparted Vedic knowledge, he thought he knew Krishna. Later on, he chastised himself or rebuked himself, and also gave an important instruction to the whole world. Jananta eva janantu kim bahu taname prabho. Manasa vajasa vapo vaibhavam tavagocharaha. He says that someone may say, I know about Krishna. Well, let them think like that, he says. But as far as I'm concerned, neither by my mind, nor by discussing it, nor by any means can I comprehend the glories and grandeur of Krishna. So the real Vedavit is Krishna. Only he can understand himself. And even that to some extent. So, is Krishna limited? He cannot fully understand himself? No, he understands everything about himself. But his glory is always expanding, so he's always a little bit behind himself. So we have heard. What can we know about all this? Another important point about Vedavit, the knower of the Vedas, is that one can understand the importance of the Vedas, especially as compared to the so-called knowledge of this world. When someone is called learned in Vedic culture, Vidvan, that doesn't mean that they have got a university degree in mathematics, economics, geology, history, or any such thing. Knowledge means knowledge of that which is truly important. Even within the Vedic sphere, there are two divisions of knowledge. There is aparavidya, which means material knowledge, and paravidya. Of course, one who sees everything in relation to Krishna may not make such a sharp distinction, but the Vedas themselves speak of that there are two subjects, the material knowledge and spiritual knowledge. But even the aparavidya, or the material knowledge that is given in the Vedas, that is ultimately meant to lead to the paravidya, or the knowledge of that which is beyond the ordinary. In other words, that which is extraordinary. But the so-called knowledge of this material world, which we can get from the modern educational institutions, materialistic knowledge, that doesn't lead to Krishna. That leads us to repeated birth and death. That leads us to get a job in some company, which is of no ultimate value whatsoever. That is termed by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur as Joro Vidya. Joto Mayar Vaibhav. All of it. It's all simply it seems glorious, but it's all the glory of Maya. So the Vedas, they are the Vaibhava, or the glory of Krishna. So the Sarasvati, she is the goddess of learning. So she's glorifies Krishna. And for materialistic people, she appears as the mundane goddess Sarasvati. So the real Sarasvati. Sarasvati, Krishna Priya, Krishna Bhakti Tarhiya, Shei Shei Vinodaya Bhaibhav. The actual Sarasvati is very dear to Krishna. Krishna Bhakti is her heart. And she is the glory of Bhaktivinoda. She infuses his writing and his speaking. So, an essential point of being Vedavit is to be, which is specifically the subject of Srimad Bhagavatam, the essence of all the Vedas, is to distinguish reality from illusion. Otherwise, what is the point of any knowledge that simply keeps us in material existence? So real knowledge is that which distinguishes the real from the superficial. That which appears to be real. And of course, Krishna, he knows everything. Actually, this, when we speak of unreal, there's nothing really unreal. There's nothing without any existence. The only thing we can say that is without existence is, if we talk of something which is just impossible, like a rabbit's horns, or flowers growing in the sky, or a square circle. Sometimes the question is asked, people think they've got a great question. Can God make a square circle? And they think, oh, that's a really good question. No, we really got them. But this is a mere exhibition of the foolishness of the questioner. That's all. So this is such a thing which is beyond the scope of which Krishna has ordained to be reality. Does not exist. Otherwise, it's unreal. Otherwise, in one sense, everything is real. That is the the contention of Shankaracharya that this material world, this is unreal. It's false. And he gives the example of the he gives several examples. On the shell, that is, there's something which looks like silver, but it's not actually silver. It's a very poor example, actually. Shankaracharya, of course, is very intelligent, but this Mayavad, it covers the, although Mayavadis think they're very intelligent, their actual intelligence is covered by it. And thus, they live in a world of imagination, being affected by the tamaguna that Lord Shiva, he spreads to make the Mayavad seem as if it's real, as if it's actually correct. So they actually think, I am God. I am self-realized, where they have no actual knowledge at all. So the true Narada Veda is a Vaishnava, not a Mayavadi. They pride themselves upon being Vedantins, or those who have come to the end of Vedic knowledge, but they haven't even come to the beginning, what to speak of the end. It's elaborate foolishness. There's all this, any knowledge which, so-called knowledge, which doesn't lead us to, or does not spring from the understanding that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, we're all His eternal servants. That knowledge is not knowledge at all. It may be very elaborate knowledge. You may see in some physics book pages and pages of Greek symbols, which those who are physicists, they can understand it all. It may be very elaborate. But the ultimate understanding is useless. They may understand so much about how different energies are working, but without understanding the energetic, their knowledge is extremely limited. Without understanding the whole, if one only understands the part, then he's certain to misunderstand, just as in the analogy of the blind men who grab different parts of the body of the elephant and describe an elephant in different ways according to their limited understanding, because they can only perceive part of the whole. And thus if one blind man grabs the trunk of an elephant without understanding the whole of the elephant, how can you understand the trunk without understanding the being of the elephant? What is the use of a trunk without an elephant? So like that, or the tail of an elephant, or the body of an elephant, just by itself, or the finger of a human, if it's detached, then it's of no use and no meaning. So the idea in the modern idea of knowledge is that, well, you learn so many little things and you add it all up together and gradually you'll get to know everything, or as much as you can. But the Vedic, or specifically the Vaishnav system of knowledge, is to come to the point immediately. First of all, we have to understand we are spirit soul, we are part and parcel of Krishna, and then you can understand everything else. But it's not that by understanding everything else that you suddenly, after years and years or lifetimes and lifetimes of study, you suddenly discover that, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Those who try to understand like that, they may do, but only after many, many lifetimes. Bahunam jandanamante gyanavang man prabhadite vasudeva sarvamiti samahat nasajulama. Is a very rare person who can understand Krishna by the arohana panta, trying to climb up the mountain of knowledge. But by the Avarohana Panta, that immediately one is brought to the peak of the mountain and then you can see everything down. So immediately if one is informed and accepts that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, immediately one's knowledge is better than someone who's been climbing for many, many lifetimes. But they still, it's such a vast and difficult mountain to climb that they're always having difficulty. They don't go very far. They can easily slip down again. So, Krishna is certainly Vedavit. He knows the principle of existence is himself. And he kindly distributes that knowledge to others. The next name, the name 134 is Kavi. Kavi is generally understood to mean a learned person. So we find in the beginning of Srimad Bhagavatam, Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavi. Adi Kavi is Brahma. And he became learned by the Vedic knowledge being imparted into his heart by Krishna. So we have the name Krishna Das Kaviraj, Ramachandra Kaviraj. So Kavi means one who is learned. So this name follows on from Vedavit. And the meaning which is given here, Kranta Darshit Vat Kavihi Sarvadrik. One who sees beyond what is revealed only by the senses is the best among the kavis. One who is sarvadrik, who sees everything. So, knowledge again is a learned person, a truly learned person, is one who sees beyond what is revealed only by the senses. It means a knowledgeable person. Specifically, knowledgeable about that which is extrasensory or beyond the purview of the mundane senses. Seeing, there are different levels of seeing. I may see a wall in front of me, painted a cream yellow color. But someone who's an interior decorator, they see the same thing, but because they're knowledgeable about the process and culture of interior design, they see so much more. They may understand, just by looking, they may understand what kind of background. Maybe this is a wall with plaster, and what kind of paint has been used, and what is the quality of the paint, and maybe it wasn't such a good idea to use that paint. And they understand so many things, which a layman doesn't understand. A layman just sees a wall with cream-colored paint. But someone who has got specialized knowledge in that field, they see so much more. They understand so much more. So knowledge gives us the ability to see in an enhanced manner. It's commonly said in English that if we understand something, we say, "I see." Seeing and understanding. Actually, they're not the same thing. Exactly. But real seeing means not just to witness, but to understand. So, by ordinary eyes, there's another example that you and I may see a tree, but Krishna, he sees in what in a particular tree he sees the jiva who's entrapped there, how the jiva came to get that body, what did he do to be to get the form of a tree. So Krishna sees more than we do. We just see a tree. And Krishna sees everything about the tree, that how the tree has grown, what are the ancestors of the tree, and how so many different living beings are living in that tree. Each tree is like a little universe, especially a large tree, an old tree. Then there's all kinds of living beings are sheltered in that tree. Birds and insects and some mammals or snakes may also live in the tree. So Krishna, he sees more. He knows everything by better knowledge. And Kavi is one who by knowledge sees, and particularly who sees beyond the superficial. One who sees through the eye of knowledge, Jnana Chakshu or Shastra Chakshu. One who sees through the eye of knowledge, the knowledge given by Shastra, such a person is an actual seer. And of course the best seer of everything, who sees everything and knows everything, is Krishna. There are so many verses in Bhagavad Gita in which Krishna says he is the principle by which, for instance, tejas tejas vinamaham, among virile persons, he is the virility. Paurushan rishu, he is the manliness in men, the ability in man. Buddhi, buddhi matam asmi, he is the intelligence of persons who are intelligent. So he is the supreme knower and seer, and we can see and know to some extent. One who sees beyond the superficial is called a kavi. That's also in relation to the Vedavit, there's also the word is there, rishi. Rishi is generally understood to mean a sage, a saintly, learned person. But rishi, the original meaning of that word is mantra drashta, one who sees mantras. Vedic knowledge, where is Vedic knowledge? Vedic knowledge is everywhere. Knowledge is, it's not limited to any place or time or circumstance. All knowledge is everywhere. We use, to get knowledge, we have to go to one who is knowledgeable. But actually knowledge is everywhere. So the Vedic mantras, they are everywhere, but a rishi is one who sees or to whom is revealed certain mantras. So in this way they see the mantra and that becomes revealed within their heart, and then they reveal that to others, to qualified persons. So in this way, Krishna, he is the supreme seer. He sees all the Vedic mantras and he allows others to see them also. This name Kavi, the seer, Krishna is the supreme seer. Actually, that's this word seer, it's not much used in English, I think, but in Indian English it's quite often used to refer to another word they use is God-man, but that's more like a modern term. But they refer to a sadhu, they offer, or especially one who's learned and respected, is referred to as a seer, which comes from Everyone sees, so why should anyone be called a seer? We don't refer to someone as a hearer or an eater, except in, oh, there's an eater going down the road. You don't say like that, unless he's an extremely gluttonous person who's always throwing something in. But seer, it specifically means ones who sees at a different level of knowledge and consciousness to that of ordinary persons. So this name, in relation to Krishna, of course all names, they are primarily in relation to Krishna, leads us into the next three names, which I won't discuss just now, but I'll just say what they are. Lokadhyaksha, Suradhyaksha, and Dharmadhyaksha. So, Adhyaksha, Aksha means eyes, and Adhyaksha means literally overseeing, seeing from up. So we have the English word overseeing. So exactly the same word we have in Sanskrit. Adhyaksha means overseer, one who sees from above and supervises. So Lokadhyaksha means he oversees all the worlds, all the planets, and all the people. Suradhyaksha means he oversees the demigods or oversees the devotees. And Dharmadhyaksha means he oversees dharma. So he sees everything, and in this way he's able to oversee everything also. Hare Krishna. That's all I'll say for now, unless there are any questions, please. And we have a musical finale. Yeah, I saw one hand there first.
I have a question.
Okay, let's have questions related to the class first. Yeah.
Regarding Shankara.
Well, that's what the Vaishnavas point out, that his example is an extremely poor example.
So
how does he get away with it? That's what I was saying. He covers the intelligence of the Mayavadis. The thing is that Mayavad is so full of logical fallacies that it's almost, I mean, it's couched in extremely learned language, and it sounds very attractive, but it's got so many logical fallacies that it's absurd from beginning to end. So how does he get away with it? Well, I guess only Lord Shiva could get away with it. He enters the consciousness of people who are inclined to tamagun and gives them a good heavy dose of tamagun and makes it seem real to them. That's why the Vaishnava acharyas, there are different methods for dealing with Mayavad, and one of them is just to take the ideas of Mayavad and bring them to their extreme, in this way show the absurdity of them. So there's so many. Actually, there's a very good book. I didn't bring any copies with me. This Pushpanjali that Patit Pavan Prabhu, my elder godbrother, he collected from Srila Prabhupada's teachings so many arguments against Mayavad and presented them in the form of a dialogue. And what Prabhupada said against Mayavad, it's all classical Vaishnav refutation of Mayavad, because it's nothing new. So just like, well, if all the jivas are actually one, so if one jiva gets liberated, then everyone should get liberated. Or if If we are actually God, but we just forgot, then Maya is more than God. Or, if you say, well, everything is one, but there is illusion. And this is a big problem for the Mayavadis. And they, among themselves, they all have different theories because of how, if we're all actually one, then what is this immense variety we see all around us? And there are different theories the Mayavadis come up with because if you bring one theory, and it's got logical faults, so then someone else has to bring up another theory. And then you get the Buddhists who just deal, they don't bother with any of it, and they just say, well, nothing to say. Nothing to say. Nothing actually exists at all on any level. So it's a big mess. But it appeals to rascals, actually. It appeals to insincere people. Traditional Buddhism, they have a very elaborate system of philosophy, which they shouldn't actually need. I mean, if everything is, as soon as you say something, as soon as you say everything, then you immediately defeated your own philosophy. Therefore, you end up with things like meditating on the sound of one hand clapping. It kills any philosophy. Traditional Buddhism?
Yeah.
Mahayana Buddhism, the Theravadas, they don't consider them to be really Buddhist. But they don't know anything. I mean, most people, they don't. It's just like the average Hindu doesn't know anything about Hinduism. So the average Buddhist, I mean, I lived in Thailand for some time, and the actual religion of the people practice is ghost worship. That's what they have ghost houses, a little spirit house in every house and every office and every factory, and they feed the ghosts. And that's the actual religion. And they have no idea about Buddhism. Actually, Buddha, he hardly taught anything anyway. And all this, who's considered the greatest philosopher of Buddhism, this Nagarjuna, he came up much later, much after Buddha. Yeah, there's all this complicated philosophy. Shunyavad, that there's nothing of actual substance. If you say this is a bookstand, but you can't exactly define it because it's always changing, so therefore it doesn't exist. And nothing exists. It's empty of any real substance. Hare Krishna. I heard this many years ago. I don't know if it's true. It's one of those Prabhupada says. But maybe I should just say it myself, and then it could be Bhakti Vikas Swami said, because it's a good one. But I can't, because I got it from someone else. That actually the first part of Chaitanya Charitamrita that was published in ISKCON with Prabhupada's commentary was chapter 7 of Adi Leela, which Srila Prabhupada produced as a separate book before he brought out the first chapter even. And he brought out that chapter because it has refutation of Mayavad, which, as we sing every day, Srila Prabhupada defined his own mission as delivering people from Nirvishesha and Shunyavada. So it's quite complex philosophy in there. And I've heard it said that a devotee said to Prabhupada that, Srila Prabhupada, I can't understand all this Mayavad. Prabhupada said, that's good. If you understood it, you'd be in trouble. Doesn't make any sense. But it lives on, because it's always attractive to the conditioned souls, to that they can feel themselves to be spiritual without surrendering to Krishna. So it is very inauspicious. And it lives on in the new age of the Western world, where without following any of the principles that real Mayavadis do, they've never even heard of Shankaracharya. Following any principles, they just imagine themselves to be God. So, traditional Mayavad, they study the Vedas, they lead a very austere and principled life. There's no question of direct sense gratification for them. But New Age is just talk a bunch of rubbish and imagine yourself to be God. So, it's very inauspicious. Yeah, what were you going to say? Yeah, that's the New Age influence, Mayavad influence. That we should hear strongly. Well, you know, someone has to speak strongly before anyone can hear. That is discussed in the book also, how in our we need to discuss these things regularly in our classes. Without that, everything will become very weak in our movement, or already has done. So, there has to be people who are willing to hear that also. That's a fact. Hearing strong speaking. I mentioned that in the book also. I don't go into it in much detail. Other books have to come out in which this will be given in much more detail. In many things I have to write. In our movement increasing, this is why I'm speaking on, one reason I'm speaking on Vishnu Sahasranama, because otherwise I tend to speak about things to do with our society and how we're off track in so many ways. And it's not good to speak about that all the time, but I haven't done for some time now, so here we go again, at least not publicly. So we tend to think that preaching success is measured by numbers and if people like us. But that's not necessarily the criterion. To have one sincere devotee is far better than having many superficial taggers on. Ekas chandras tamohanti kingna taragar sahasrashah. Better than thousands of stars is one moon. Gorky Shodas Babaji Maharaj had one disciple. Better to have one disciple like that than hundreds of people who they're superficial. We also shouldn't try to convert Prabhupada into what by our perverse intelligence we would like him to be. We should hear what he has to say. And not convert him in our imagination into a kind old grandfather who simply smiles and tolerates whatever nonsense you do. And whatever you do, you do whatever you like and Prabhupada will bless you and then you'll get Krishna prema. But That's not what Prabhupada taught. So, Hare Krishna. What's that? Another question? Question? Yeah. Being polite, nice, airy, fairy, pleasing.
On the other hand,
the other extreme. Or being cutting without the sensitivity. Let's study the example of Srila Prabhupada and the previous acharyas and follow that example. That's the answer to your contention. Follow Srila Prabhupada. That doesn't mean no one can be exactly like Srila Prabhupada, nor was he exactly like his guru. And that's the philosophy that all the gurus have taught us, that every jiva is different. So it's not that everyone's going to be exactly the same. But we can see Srila Prabhupada's example, which is, what is that? Vajradapi Koturani, Kusamadapi Kumal. This is as hard as a thunderbolt and as soft as a flower. So, that example we can follow. Both extremes, but they're not extremes. They're the natural characteristics of a perfect person. We only see it as extremes because we are always trying to find the middle point in which we can go on with our sense gratification. But actual devotees are intense. They're not wishy-washy people. That is stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita, that the devotees of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, they are, what's the word used? Bhisham, which means terrible, just like Bhishma. They're intense people. So devotees, they're not wishy-washy, airy-fairy. They're intense. Bhakti is intense. The aim of a Mayavadi is to just become completely mild. But a devotee is an intense person. They're just extremely focused on pleasing Krishna. And they reject anything which is outside the scope of Krishna consciousness. Krishna tells us, Sarvadhaman parityaja mamekam sharanam raja. This is not a call to a middle path. It's an extreme path, you may say, of rejecting everything and only accepting Krishna. So this idea that we should be, this what we talk about, a balanced personality, that's coming from modern psychology, not from Bhagavad Gita. We have all these ideas which we import from mundane psychology, but this is, we should understand psychology from Krishna. The whole idea of what it means to be a proper person, according to mundane perspective, is quite different from that which Krishna gives. Prajahati yada kaman sarvan partha manogatan. One who is stithadhi muni, one who is fixed in consciousness, his symptom is he's completely given up all desires for sense gratification. That doesn't fit with anything in the modern age. They would call that imbalance and extreme. Hare Krishna. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.